Blog Talk Radio.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Oh, deep in my heart.
We Shall Overcome by the legendary Pete Seeger. Mr. Edwards, we'd like to welcome in Studio B. We'd like to welcome everybody to today's episode of On Point. I'm Don Allen with co-host Mr. Ronald Edwards in Studio B, broadcasting live from the Apple Studio in downtown Minneapolis. Mr. Edwards, how are you today?
Real good, Mr. Allen, but strictly from the point of being able to defend the integrity of the Black Fourth Estate, I'm just real good that we're blessed. And also, I'm good about the fact that we have been blessed with the attorney for Mr. Booker agreeing to come on live with us to clear the air. It's clear that after the attack upon you on the internet, cyber, if you will, demeaning both you and our guest, Mr. Patton, I'm just happy because far too often in Black America, these kinds of attacks come from institutions, and African Americans and others, poor people, are never in a position to respond, to refute, if you will, and et cetera. So I feel blessed in that context, and I just was spiritually moved. I have to tell you and our listening audience, I was spiritually moved by that short rendition of We Shall Overcome, because God knows we've done everything that we could to overcome, and clearly in this particular brutal assault and beating of an African American, everything was attempted to be done right, and so I feel blessed, and I also feel honored to be a part of this revelation, if you will.
Yes. Yes, and Mr. Edwards, we'd like to let everybody know our guest call-in number locally is 347-246-3904, and toll-free is 877-537-2878. Today's topic is local media goes black on black news, and joining us today is the attorney for Mr. Mario Booker, a gentleman that was beaten into a coma by the Minneapolis police. And his attorney, Mr. Michael Patton, is joining us today. Mr. Patton, how are you?
Fine. Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
Okay. And Mr. Edwards, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Allen. We have agreed that mm-hmm. this would be the appropriate way as it pertains to talking with Mr. Patton and actually examining him. Mr. Patton, welcome once again. Mr. Patton was with us about a year and a half ago on some important matters. Mr. Patton, let me give you the background on this end and then have you begin to, educate really our listening audience with respect to this outrageous assault upon an African-American citizen, 34-year-old. Yesterday, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, through the senior reporter Steve Brandt, posted on the internet a scathing attack on my colleague, Mr. Allen, indicating that Mr. Allen had posted information and encouraged people to tune in and listen to this program, listen to you, and possibly listen to Mr. Booker. And Mr. Brandt, in his dissertation, indicated that Mr. Allen is a liar, and that this situation never happened. Mr. Brandt said he went to respectable African-American publications and leaders, and none of them knew anything about it, so that meant that it didn't happen. Yes. Mr. Patton, could you walk us through what the heck happened, and starting with the date and time of day?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Brandt, but I can tell you that it did happen. The incident in question happened in the early morning hours of Tuesday, November 20th. My client was physically beaten by two officers just into the border of Robbinsdale and was taken from the scene by ambulance to North Memorial Medical Center, where he was unconscious for in excess of 24 hours. I don't know exactly how long he was unconscious because I don't have the medical records at this point, but we do know that multiple CT scans were taken of him, and he was put into the intensive care unit, and he was severely beaten, and I would allege was within an inch of his life. If you're beaten so severely that you have fractures on your face and you're unconscious, that's a very serious beating, and if the majority of the trauma is to the head area, that could easily result in a situation where someone could be killed or brain damaged. Fortunately, he is not. He does have slurred speech at this point, but he does not appear to have significant cognitive problems. But this was a very, very severe beating. And I believe that the officers in question are going to concede that it happened, but they're going to allege that it was appropriate conduct under the circumstances. That's my reasonable assumption.
Okay. When did you, Mr. Padgett, become officially involved? At what point were your legal services retained by the family?
Well, I was first contacted about the case 2 days after it happened. In fact, when I was initially contacted, I believe my client was still unconscious. And the initial contact I received was along the lines that the family was upset that they could not get access to DeMario in the ICU. In other words, there was the same officer who we believe was the main individual that beat him was outside of his room and would not allow any of the family members access to the room that he was in.
Well, let me get this correct. And as a former overseer and monitor for the Department of Justice of this Minneapolis Police Department, let me get this correct, what I'm hearing you saying. You're saying that the officer, who I believe to be an Officer Oates, I think that's spelled O-C-H-S, if I'm not mistaken, John, you're saying that the officer who assaulted Mr. Booker positioned himself at the hospital in front of the room and blocked entrance to the hospital room? Is that correct? Okay. We got some interference there. We may have a satellite that's interfering with it. And so that's correct, that this officer actually blocked entrance to the hospital room to family members? You still there, Don?
Yes, I am.
It sounds like I heard the disruption. It sounds like we may have lost.
Mr. Patton, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back.
I was off for about
30 seconds.
Okay,
so,
yeah, you were. Let me be crystal clear that the officer who I had identified to me as an Officer Oaks, last name spelled O-C-H-S, I think, that this officer positioned himself at the hospital in front of the room, of the door, and denied entrance to the family?
According to my client's mother and brother, yes.
Well, does the officer also work as security for North Memorial?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I see. Well, then I'm trying to understand why he was there. But go ahead, Mr.
Well,
continue.
Yeah, in any event, the reason they knew this officer is that my client contends, and this is corroborated by his mother and brother, one of his brothers at least, that this officer had harassed him for years, for many, many years, repeatedly. So that certainly might be a factor into why he was so viciously assaulted. We're certainly looking into that angle.
All right, Mr. Patton, let us
yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead,
sir. Go ahead.
Well, I might add as an aside, there were three witnesses to this beating, and I have interviewed two of them, and they corroborate the fact that they completely corroborate my client's recollection of what happened. Fortunately, my client, although he was unconscious, a lot of times when someone takes a significant beating like that, they can experience something called post-traumatic amnesia. He does not have it. He remembers everything up until the point that he went unconscious. And when he regained consciousness, he was in the hospital. Now, I want to make clear to your listeners that the beating occurred in an area where we believe that one, possibly two squads would have picked up the vast majority of the beating that this man took. And the squad video, we believe the squad video exists. I've made a demand for the squad video. It has yet to be produced. I had hand-delivered a letter to the acting chief, who will be the official chief as of Tuesday, requesting the squad video. I did receive a prompt response, but the long and short of that is that I've been told that the matter is under investigation. They will not produce it to me. However, my client's criminal defense lawyer has requested it, and it will be produced in the criminal action. My client's been charged criminally. And we expect to have it very soon. And I wish we had it now, but we don't. But I'm very confident that once that squad video is produced, it's going to corroborate what the witnesses saw and what my client experienced.
Now, you said that your client has been charged criminally. What was he? What has he been charged with? And I understand there was an arraignment about a week ago.
Yeah, he's been arraigned. He pled not guilty. He's been charged with fleeing or attempting to evade arrest. I forget exactly what the exact charge is. And he's also been charged with a gun charge. They're saying that a gun was found in the vehicle.
During the time of the arrest?
Well, I don't think so. I don't believe the gun had nothing to do with what happened at all. It apparently was found after the fact fortuitously. The vehicle my client was operating was not his. But a gun had nothing to do with this situation, because had there been a gun, I'm confident that the officers would have told all three people to get out of the vehicle, put their hands up, would have had guns drawn. That didn't happen at all. They came up to the vehicle after my client was out of it, and that was at the point where he was severely beat. And he will say in no uncertain terms that he was not resisting arrest at all. He had completely capitulated, and that's when he was severely beaten.
All right. Now, does your client... though confirmed, did he lead the police on a chase? I mean,
absolutely.
We have to do
no
that
one,
for Bell.
No one denies that he did that. His contention, the reason that he fled, was because he was scared of this officer, and I think people can understand why after what happened.
Uh-huh.
He fled at the distance. I've actually gone the route. It's about 6 or 7 miles, but he did pull over, and it was at that point, not in response to voice directives, that he put his hands up, laid down in the middle of the street, spread eagle, and it was at that point where the two officers came up and viciously assaulted him.
Let me be clear, Mr. Patton, on that. Now, you're indicating that your client and apparently at least two of the three independent witnesses or the witnesses confirmed this, but I want to be absolutely crystal clear here. He complied. He did not attempt to walk away or put his hand in his pocket in a manner to draw a weapon?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I see. Have you been given because you are handling the civil part of this, is that
right.
correct, Mr. Patton?
Right, right.
And the Mesbecher law firm is handling the criminal part, is that correct?
That's correct. That's
right.
correct.
Now, have you been given access to the to three crucial reports, the chase report, the force report, and the critical incident report? You've been able to receive that already, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Let me go back. Let me complete, because the attack on Mr. Allen, my associate who is on the other end here on this
yes.
program, and by the way, we are talking with Michael Patton, the civil attorney for Mr. Booker, an African-American savagely beaten on the 20th day of November at 4:30 a.m. in the morning in the municipality of Robbinsdale, and we'll come to that in a couple of minutes. But I just want to be absolutely clear. Was there some reason that the two sets of attorneys that you chose not to make this public, other than we talked about it and made an announcement on this program at approximately 3:35 p.m. Central Standard Time a week ago today? But was there some reason that you decided not to give this story to the mainstream media?
Well, I was contacted by the Star Tribune. I was contacted by a reporter for the Star Tribune.
What?
I have no idea. Yes, I have no idea how he got my name.
Could you name the reporter for us, please?
Well, I feel a little uncomfortable doing that, Mr.
Okay, Edwards. All right.
Yeah, I'd rather not. But let me say this. Let me just say this. I've been a practicing lawyer now for 26 years. I've probably had, give or take, 50 cases that have received media attention. So it's something that I'm pretty used to. I'd say of those 50 cases, maybe 15 have received significant media attention.
Yeah.
I was contacted by the reporter, and he asked me questions about the case, and then had planned to do other more substantive acts in relationship to the story. And this probably went on for an hour and seemed very interested in the story. And then in a span of 10 minutes, I was contacted and told that that they would not be doing the story.
This being the Star Tribune. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it was strange because I've never had that happen before, where that type of thing, you know, happened, where all of a sudden there was no interest in the story. Now, I think probably that would change once we have the squad video. But to be honest with you, I'm a little disturbed by the notion that you have to have squad video to confirm the beating of an African-American person. I mean, what's wrong with what he recalls, and what about what the witnesses saw? You know.
Well, what about the hospital records? I mean, obviously, under the current health benefit laws of this country is not going to administer it to the injuries of a person and not record it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the injuries would indicate the kind of, I mean, any medical doctor will tell you that gives them a good indication as to the type of beating the person took. I mean, this man has 3 plates inserted into his face.
And could you just explain to us, Mr. Patton, what you mean when you say plates?
Happens is they physically, a surgeon physically inserts hardware, if you will, into a person's face because of the nature of the fractures of the face. It's the appropriate way to deal with that. He also has scarring on 4 different sites on his head, 2 are in the hairline, and like one, for example, is by his eyebrow. I call that the head. His nose was broken. I mean, this was a savage beating. And it appeared that the intensity of the beating dealt with his face and head. They really weren't so much concerned about other parts of his body, although it appears that the injury to his ribs are severe bruising. I don't think the ribs were fractured, but they took 8 or 9 different CT scans. And, I mean, doctors don't cavalierly do CT scans unless they're really needed, you know.
Yeah, because they're expensive.
And an ER just isn't going to do that unless they have good reason to do it. You know, not to mention the amount of time that he was unconscious. I mean, he was taken away from the scene in an ambulance. We have received word that there may be someone who is a neighbor. The 3 witnesses I'm speaking of, were 2 were in the vehicle with Mr. Booker, and another one was in a vehicle that was following the vehicle that Booker was operating. We have received word, and we haven't yet had a chance to investigate this fully, that there may be a homeowner that lived near the scene where this happened that may be a witness also, and we're going to be aggressively pursuing that lead too. So,
all right, on that particular point, that's a good segue, if you will, to the following question, Mr. Patton. And again, we're talking to Michael Patton, attorney at law. In fact, he was the attorney well noted and a very courageous undertaking in the death of Fong Lee, a young Asian shot and killed by Officer Jason Anderson in this city a couple years ago. A couple of things. Did the Internal Affairs Unit question your client after he came out of his coma?
Immediately after he regained consciousness, an officer attempted to interview him as part of the criminal investigation. And as I understand it, another officer with Internal Affairs attempted to interview him also, which, you know, all due respect, I don't think that's really fair to attempt to interview someone when they're on medication and they're coming out of a severe beating. I think that's very unfair. You know, especially to, and I don't know if he was Mirandized, but to at least let the person reasonably recuperate before you're sticking a pencil and a legal pad in their face trying to interview them. I just find that personally reprehensible. But that was attempted. I don't believe there were any discussions of substance, but that did happen apparently. So,
all right, let me then go back to some sequences. You have confirmed and have been quite transparent in this discussion that your client did flee, was involved in a chase, but it was not because he had become a suspect because he had stuck somebody up or was selling dope or
firing shots in the air, et cetera. Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, I at this point, I have no idea why, we don't know why the officer attempted to pull him over in the first instance. It doesn't appear that he had committed any crime. And this,
oh, by the way, that would be in the chase report.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did have a comprehension that he was to pull over, and there's no doubt about that. But I'd like to know in the first instance what he had done. He had just left the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just driven, you know, maybe 100 feet. And the same officer had driven through the parking lot, looked at him, and wagged his finger at him as if to say, you know, don't mess up or I'm going to get you kind of a thing.
Okay.
And this officer had a history of taking this guy into custody, for example, under the false pretenses that he had a suspended driver's license. Well, you know, they'd sort it out, and he had a license. So things like towing his car from his home, towing a boat from his home, you know, taking him into custody.
Black man shouldn't have a boat here in Minnesota? Is that what we should discern from that?
I mean, I don't know, but, I mean, suffice to say we're going to be investigating all those angles, and there will be a paper trail on all that. So, I mean, we're going to be able to get detail on all of this.
Okay.
And, I mean, this guy was frightened horribly about this officer. He's got harassment for 10 years.
Yeah, as you said earlier, there appeared to be good reason based on the beating. Let's go back now to, because I want to make sure that we're crystal clear again on this. I like using that word today. Now, these were Minneapolis police officers, all right?
Yes.
Hired and employees of the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, the assault on Mr. Booker took place in a small municipality, population about, 18,000 or something like that, called Robbinsdale. Which is right adjacent to North Minneapolis, on the northwest side of North Minneapolis, okay, in close proximity to the legendary North Minneapolis. Now, did the Robbinsdale police participate in this assault?
No, I don't believe so. There was two Robbinsdale officers present at the scene, and I did speak with their chief, who was very candid with me, in my opinion, and was telling me the truth that there was a squad at the scene. However, when they arrived, it appears they arrived at a time where the assault of Mr. Booker had already happened.
Okay.
He told me that the squad video in that vehicle doesn't show anything of substance, and I believe him. Through the supervising sergeant for these two officers, he's checking with the officers to see if they saw anything substantive in terms of what happened at that time. And he said he will get back to me. It doesn't appear, though, that based on the timing of the assist, that these officers really are going to be privy to any of the detail. And, of course, I was hopeful that we'd be able to get squad video from that vehicle, but it doesn't appear that there's anything relevant from their squad. I would note, as an aside, Mr. Edwards, the timing of this was between, 2:15 a.m. and 2:30 a.m., not 4:30.
Okay. So there's a reason then why the chase report would indicate 4:30 a.m. Maybe they can explain that to you in doing deposition. All right, let me go to a couple other things because we want to be as transparent and as possible here. We need to, particularly in light of the decision by the media to not follow this story, investigated or et cetera. In fact, my colleague again, Mr. Allen, who's being very patient here, was told by a representative of KMSP, who I do believe may have even talked to you, but again, we will honor your position of not wanting to necessarily rain on anybody, but we'll do that because we've already named them. But Mr. Allen was told that there was not even any proof that this had actually happened. Okay, so we know what was happening. I have to ask you this question, Mr. Patton, because sources have indicated to me, is it true, sir, that your client and yourself were invited to a local television station and actually there was an interview that took place that was to be shown that night that did not happen? Can you confirm or can you address that?
Yeah, there was an interview. The story has not been shown yet.
I want to be crystal clear here, Mr. Patton. There was an invitation for discussion, negotiation between you and this particular TV station. On a early morning around 10:30, you and your client, Mr. Booker, who was still certainly in significant pain and discomfort, went to this television station. You went into studio. Your client was photographed. You were interviewed. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
And let me add something, Mr.
Right
Edwards. I think it takes a lot of courage for someone to go public when they've been a subject of a vicious assault. And my client did that for two reasons. I'm going to let you know what the reasons were.
Please, sir. Thank you.
he doesn't want to be bothered by the police anymore, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he has a reasonable presumption that if he goes public with what happened to him, the Minneapolis police will stop bothering him, and I think that's a realistic goal. Secondly, he feels that if he goes public with this, that hopefully, maybe, at long last, it will result in some changes in terms of how some officers conduct themselves within the Minneapolis Police Department.
I have to tell you, Mr. Patton, I admire him for his courage, but as a former overseer and monitor of the Minneapolis Police Department, it'll never happen. But go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it might be an unrealistic goal, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. I'd really like to see if there's going to be any discipline of these officers. And it's a perfect opportunity for the new chief to, you know, separate herself from her predecessor. Because if that squad video shows what I believe it's going to show, this is going to be very, very disturbing to people in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, not only here, but throughout the state of Minnesota.
Right.
And I feel confident that that squad video is going to show exactly what the witnesses told me happened and exactly what my client told me happened.
All right, Mr. Patton, because we're coming up on 25 minutes and we appreciate your time. It's on a Saturday, and I know you have children and family. But let me go back to the gun, because we know that right-wing elements, conservative elements will maintain, you know, Negro had a gun, they knew it, et cetera. Walk us through again, please, sir, the timeline, the sequential timeline of when this gun was found.
Well, I don't know exactly, but I'm reasonably certain that the gun was found much later. You know, what would happen is the vehicle would be impounded, and then you have, you know.
I just want to cut in, sir.
Yeah,
the vehicle was impounded. It was not turned over to the owner or one of the individuals in the vehicle with Mr. Booker. The vehicle was impounded, and my understanding is taken to the forensic impound lot.
I believe that's correct. The vehicle was certainly towed and taken into possession of the department, and I'm reasonably certain that where you say it went is where it went. I don't know exactly if the gun was found at the scene, but I can tell your listeners.
Well, let me just clarify, not the scene of the assault, but the scene where the vehicle was in the impound lot.
That's correct.
Thank you. Okay. All right.
But I can tell your listeners unequivocally that the chase, the stop, and the apprehension of my client and the subsequent beating he took had absolutely nothing to do with a gun.
Okay.
The fact that a gun may have been found, and may relate to the occupants of that vehicle is a fortuitous fact having nothing to do with the beating my client took. Now, by the way, my client, I want to be clear about this. My client is going to say in no uncertain terms that he did not have a gun.
And that's what we're driving towards. Okay.
And I can prove, I feel confident I can prove to a fact finder that ever gets to that stage that he did not have a gun when he got in that vehicle, because we know he didn't have a gun in the bar, and he was pulled over. He was attempted to be pulled over, you know, minutes after he left the bar. So the notion that he could have received the gun in the parking lot is absurd. So I can tell you that this is going to be somewhat of a mystery, because my client says he didn't have a gun, and the male occupant who owned the vehicle said the gun was not his. So, you know, one of the things they'll be looking at is, I'm sure, is whether there's trace evidence on the gun linking the gun to either of these men. But regardless,
mm-hmm.
the gun has nothing to do with the circumstances of my client's beating.
It's just something in the form of a weapon that showed up at least 2 days after the car was towed to the forensic impound lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly.
Well,
I don't know exactly when they found the gun, but
no
question. Yeah. Well, the point I'm trying to make is, if they really thought there was a gun in the car, what the normal protocol for police officers is to ask all occupants, and they draw their guns.
Oh yes, absolutely.
They ask all occupants to get out of the car. They ask them to put their hands up, because they don't want to walk up to a car and get shot. So,
not like an officer lost his life just 2 days ago in a place called Cold Springs, Minnesota. Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And I can certainly understand that. The point is, this whole situation, the apprehension of Booker, would have been handled completely differently if there was a belief that a gun existed. So what I'm saying is, the notion that a gun was found later, okay,
right,
is a fortuitous fact having nothing to do with Booker's apprehension. I'm very trust me, this is a sensitive subject for me, because I was lead trial counsel on the Fong Lee case. And anybody familiar with that case is very much aware of the fact that there was a gun found near that young man's body, and we all found out that that gun had a sordid history, and I believe that I proved, although apparently the jury may not have agreed, that that gun had been in police custody before it ended up next to that kid's body, a gun, by the way, that had no trace evidence on it.
Whatsoever. Mm. That's right. That's right. I wrote about that in my columns and attended every day of the trial in the federal court.
So this is a sensitive subject for me because I think the evidence was clear in that particular case that that gun was a drop gun. So
let me just, in conclusion, as we begin to wrap, Mr. Patton, what is the current situation health-wise of your client, Mr. Booker?
Well, his face is swollen. He has difficulty with his speech. You know, he's not doing too bad, all things considered. I mean, in a situation like that, you're certainly happy that his cognitive functioning appears to be fine. But, you know, as you can imagine, I mean, it's a heck of a traumatic experience to go through to be beaten. I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to say he was beaten within an inch of his life. If you're unconscious for over 24 hours and your face is broken, that's a bad beating.
Yes, it is. Mr. Patton, I want to thank you on behalf of my colleague and myself and our listening audience. And I appreciate Mr. Allen, my associate, who I know, you know, likes to fully engage, deciding on the strategy based on the attacks on him and against his reputation by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, KMSP, and others. Mike, I want to thank you for spending this time with us, and our prayers for strength and perseverance and the quest for justice on behalf of your client.
Well, I appreciate that, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Mr. Allen, again, appreciate my co-host yielding. Because of the vicious journalistic attack on Mr. Allen and Mr. Patton, really. Mr. Patton was being very kind. I, by the way, am not subject to any restraints with respect to naming who the reporters are, who the station is. In fact, on my television program to air tomorrow on MTN, I discuss in detail name the reporter for the television station, and et cetera. Actually, Mr. Allen and I talked about that at approximately, and I wanted to kind of do a kind of historical piece exactly 1 week ago, almost to the hour. It was at 3:35 last Saturday that I broke this story, shared it with Mr. Allen. We got a couple calls. And, you know, to our listening audience, you cannot believe how shocked I was when Mr. Brandt and the Star Tribune's position with respect to the integrity of the reporting done by this investigative team. The attack on Mr. Allen, I think, Mr. Allen, as I turn it back over to you, that you are clearly owed an apology.
Oh, yes.
Star Tribune, by KMSP. And by WCCO, and to my friend Reggie Chapman. Reggie, answer your phone, man.
Yeah, that'd be really nice, Reg. Mr. Harris, I'd like to play something for you. This is the news director of Fox 9 News, who called me on Wednesday of this week after I had been badgering him to tell him that this story was. Well, let me give the history real quick.
Yeah.
I had contacted senior producer Ashley DeRosa at Fox 9 News and asked her to this guy has been beaten by the Minneapolis police. It happened on the 20th, and you haven't reported about it. She asked me, she says, can you get the police report? Can you send me pictures? And you know what? I have to.
In other words, can you do my job?
Can I do her? I don't get those Fox 9 News checks, okay? And if I did, it'd be a whole different situation going over there. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to call her news director, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, a senior producer at a TV station, I know, and we both know from being in media for years, that you can't have a full voicemail.
Okay? Right.
And you call, this voicemail is full. So the news just goes out the window. And so I talked to him, and he talked to her. She called me back, and she says, oh, you're lucky. I could have gotten a lot of trouble. I said, I think you did get a lot of trouble. And so this is the response from Bill Pullman, the news director at Fox 9 News, KMSP Channel 9. I'm going to play that here.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. breaking news here at Fox 9. I have an update on the tip call that you gave us last week and my investigation into it. In the meantime, I sure would appreciate it if you would consider taking down that I guess, message for people to call me and tell me that we're ignoring this story. I mean, the first I heard about it was yesterday, and I followed up on it right away in terms of how this slipped through the cracks with us checking. So, I don't feel that's fair, and it's certainly not correct that we don't care about news, because we care about all kinds of news. We just perhaps had a mess up here where we didn't communicate, which does happen, and I am looking into it. So if you consider that in the short term, I sure would appreciate it. My number is 952-946-5720.
Okay, then he gives his number. Did you hear that, Mr. Edwards?
Oh, certainly, and I think our listening audience, both domestically and internationally, getting an understanding on how things work here in Minnesota, the land of liberalism. You know, it's interesting that he confirmed to you that they clearly knew about the story, but that they had done nothing about it. Now, let me ask you this question, Mr. Allen. That was a couple days ago. Has he ever gotten back to you?
No, he has not gotten back to me. I even attempted to call Ms. Ashley DeRosa, senior producer at Fox 9 News, KMSP Channel 9, and to no avail. Of course, her voicemail is full still. No, I couldn't get back to her. But then again, you know, Mr. Edwards, we did call down to WCCO and talk to a Mr. Butcher, because the news director guy had went home for the day, who actually confirmed with us that there was a interview done with reporter Reg Chapman and as Mr. Patton and
Booker.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Booker. And so it's kind of unusual that they're not running this. And then, you know, last night, Mr. Edwards, I mean, you had alerted me to this attack by Mr. Steve Brandt, and this is really interesting, because in his attack he goes, I checked two black-owned online sites and one all-purpose indie online site, all based in Minneapolis, and didn't find anything there. Okay, Steve Brandt is a dinosaur. The Star and Tribune are dinosaurs. Okay, number one, there's one person in this town that does black. Well. Two people in this town that do black news in real time, and that's you and I. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for this in the Spokesman Recorder, it probably will be there Monday. You're looking for this in the Insight News, you're not going to see it. You're looking for this on KMOJ, good luck, fans of hip-hop.
Absolutely.
And so for Mr. Brandt even to look around, and then he says that We're in the non-corporate media aside from Mr. Allen's blog, in which I do not place great amount of faith, one can read coverage of the beating Mr. Asbloom describes, was in the attack. So I posted the story because it was true, and, you know, he's saying don't have no faith. Disregard that, because this didn't happen. So the Star Tribune, Fox 9 News, the one who care 11, K-A-R-E, K-S-T-P, none of these stations, all the stations got the information. I know last night that a press release went out to 40,000 RSS feeds with this information and was sent to them last week, too. So they knew that this was happening.
Let me say this, Mr. Allen, based on additional information, because I feel very badly, first and foremost, for Mr. Booker, because he is the man that took this brutal, savage beating. And as Mr. Patton said, his attorney, civil attorney, that he was probably one kick away from not being here, okay? You know, CCO allowed Mr. Chapman, Reggie Chapman, an African-American, to, the first time he backed out, then he changed his position. There was an anticipation that it was going to happen. He invited Mr. Booker, the victim, his attorney, Mr. Patton. They came to CCO at 10:30 a.m. that morning, were ushered into a studio. Interview began. Pictures were taken of Mr. Booker, who was in excruciating pain at that particular point. I mean, pictures were taken. Those pictures were to be shown that night on the 6 and 10 news, if you will. I am told that the news director at WCCO, who came to us from Florida, talking in terms of white folks' paradise, if you will, apparently made the statement. He's made a number of statements personally attacking Mr. Chapman, and everybody knows that. In fact, two very distinguished journalists have left WCCO as an outgrowth of this man's racism, if you will. He refers to Reggie Chapman, who was a very dark-complected, large African-American man, as a black bear, as my big black bear, and as a man who we need to put as much white powder on as possible because sometimes we can't see him. This is how the news directors and the general manager at WCCO, which, by the way, is not a locally owned station. CCO is one of those stations that's owned by the network CBS. CBS owns WCCO. Don Shelby, a very respected anchor for 30 years, actually left, kind of retired early, surprised everybody, because Don Shelby had enough. Caroline Lowe, one of the most respected police investigative reporters in the history of media here, left a year and a half ago because of the kind of racist comments that float around WCCO, and particularly emanating from this character that came here from Miami, Florida, that refers to Reggie, quote-unquote, as his big black bear, and who made the statement, according to sources, after it was clear that Mr. Patton and his client were coming to substantiate and support what had happened to Mr. Booker, that we don't have time. We're dealing with white folks' news. I mean, this is how the cat talks, man. This is how they talk inside of CCO, KMSP, KSTP, Channel 11, and et cetera. Man, do not be fooled, our listening audience, both locally and domestically, do not be fooled about the disdain and disregard these people in the fourth estate here in Minnesota have for black Americans.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're absolutely correct. And this is a strange day. And Mr. Edwards, there's even another swing to this. There is not one black flagship organization in the state of Minnesota, and they all know about this beating, who has come forward to call a press conference, to march, to rally, to have concern at all whatsoever. And, you know, we have all these community organizers. We have Occupy the Hood, Occupy this, Occupy that. And
Occupy your mind.
Yeah. And vote no. And none of these people have decided to organize, or this is a priority. Now, I wonder what would happen if one of them got beat like Mr. Booker.
Or one of their children, or one of their loved ones. You're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. In fact, for those that want to authenticate what we're talking about here on this program, on this Saturday, on the first day of December in the year of our Lord, 2012, Mr. Allen, my associate here, reached out to the head of the Council on Black Minnesota, who wasn't even around and available. But we had been told, and we announced it last week, you know, a week ago to this hour, that we had heard that the Council on Black Minnesotans, under my good friend Ed McDonald, was going to raise a question, if you will. Now, let me tell you something else that's happened. And, you know, the phone lines are open, but let me get this one in. You know, I knew that this was a quote-unquote glorious week for a historical event, and that is the appointment and confirmation, and she will be sworn in Tuesday, of the first female chief and also lesbian, which I see no relevance to even deal with that, but the first female chief who has a Native American heritage. And I knew that there was a sensitivity at the Star Tribune to make sure that the best possible portrait was painted of Chief Jhené Hartel coming in. I was absolutely amused this morning when I saw a piece by Eric Roper of the Minneapolis Star Tribune saying something rather interesting, that the incoming chief, Jhené Hartel, had made the statement that one of the things he definitely was going to take a look at was the use of excessive force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that question, when she appeared before the Public Safety Committee this past Wednesday, that wasn't even an issue really to be talked about, even though your name, this program, and our names were being bantered around, and particularly you, my friend, my associate, that you had put out false information and that this never happened, and everybody in the white fourth estate knew that it had happened.
Yes.
Okay? They knew that it happened. Mr. Patton, acting in the best interest of his client, if you will, being due diligent, had attempted to reach out and ask people to take a look at the story. You had done the same thing. And for leadership, so-called leadership in this black community, because I'm aware of the kinds of attacks also that you came under from so-called leaders, particularly in the ecumenical community, who said, this is just something those guys made up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And so the article in this morning's Minneapolis Star Tribune talking about that this incoming chief will take a look at excessive force, they already knew about the excessive force, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, one of the things that was discussed earlier this week was that it was really an ugly situation. The video showing the beating of Mr. Booker, okay? Those were the statements that were being made. And I thought, based on those statements, as a former overseer, if you will, and monitor on behalf of the Department of Justice of the Minneapolis Police Department, I thought that maybe we would see some change. Not rolling, you know, boulders down the hill or et cetera, but, you know, small nuggets, if you will, and a situation. I understand that two officers in question have been guaranteed that there will be no disciplinary action taken against them. I also have to say this, that the police chief in Robbinsdale, the small Minnesota suburb adjacent to the city of Minneapolis, is really not happy because he's been receiving calls, Mr. Allen, indicating that his police participated in the brutal and savage beating of Mr. Booker. But to Mr. Patton, the attorney, who was just on this program, he clarified the fact that there is no indication that the Robbinsdale Police Department and their very small department, I think they have, I don't know, 34 officers or something like that, they did not participate in this brutal beating. And so I just want to, for the record, for transparency, in a situation in which Steve Brandt, writing in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, said that my associate, my colleague here, had facilitated an absolute lie, an absolute myth of the beating of a 34-year-old African-American inside the city of Robbinsdale after being pursued and confronted by two Minneapolis police officers, one who had a very, very, very long history with this young man. By the way, we want to repeat that Mr. Booker's next court appearance will be the 13th of December. I hope, Mr. Allen, that your leaders, are there and present and ready to support this African-American, who, by the way, has no criminal record that would necessitate the kind of scrutiny that took place.
Yeah, I agree 100% here. It's really strange, Mr. Edwards, how this is all unfolding, because I'm looking at the Star Tribune website here in the other studio, and, of course, there's a big picture of the new police chief, the Minneapolis police chief tackles toughest job in the city. I think the toughest job in the city is being black and dodging police cars and get pulled
right
over. Now, that's the toughest job in Minneapolis right now. And so it's kind of interesting just to see this. And you remember a while back when former Minnesota Viking Carl Eller was in an entanglement with the Minneapolis police?
In his garage, in his home, yes. And both of them pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been announced today that he will get a $2,000 settlement from City Hall after he claimed nearly 4 years ago that police had hid and destroyed evidence using excessive force during an incident at his house.
And the evidence was the video from
mm-hmm.
their squad car of them trying to attack Mr. Eller, who is in the NFL Hall of Fame, if you will. Oh, that's interesting. Only $2,000?
Yeah, $2,000.
I know that he supposedly had a case through the attorney, Mr. Goines, has been in the federal court for over a year and a half, almost 2 years, suing the Minneapolis Police Department. It'd be interesting to see what that little measly $2,000 was about. But Mr. Eller, who, for those of you that don't remember the glory days of the Minnesota Vikings in the 1960s, Carl goes like really about 6'6", 270, but I'm talking about the man is chiseled out of stone, him and the legendary and great Jim Marshall, and, of course, Supreme Court Justice Alvin Page, part of the Purple People Leaders, and both Sutherland and Larson, who were two of the the white Vikings, if you will, that were part of that great defensive front. But I'm glad that they acknowledged the fact that they violated Carl's rights and damage. But what the property was, they destroyed the video. And I'm afraid that Mr. Patton is going to have a surprise of his life when he finds out that the video from that squad car of the brutal and savage beating of Mr. Booker has been lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, it's interesting we don't have any kind of calls. To repeat the number, I thought that we would hear, you know, because after the kind of attack that has been mounted about the fact that none of this ever happened, I guess Mr. Patton has just kind of overwhelmed him today.
Yes, he has. And that call-in number, the lines are open, is 347-426-3904. Again, call us, 347-426-3904.
And we have, about 11 and a half minutes left, Mr.
Yes,
Allen?
11 and a half minutes, yes, sir.
Okay. By the way, just moving up to the side, very troubling execution of a 17-year-old African-American about the same time that Mr. Booker was being almost beaten to death here in Minneapolis, a young man by the name of Davis. I think you have it there. We got it off of the black website. Young black man shot twice by a Caucasian vigilante who became angry that the young African-American and his four associates were sitting in a parking lot at a convenience store playing some music. The Caucasian terrorist indicated that they were disturbing him, whatever the hell that meant, and proceeded to open fire, killing the 17-year-old young Mr. Davis. Could you just read that piece there, Mr. Allen, on your computer? Mine is loaded up right now.
Okay, yes. The gentleman's name that was shot, 17-year-old Jordan Russell, by Michael Dunn, the white killer. It says, Dunn, a white man who was in town with his girlfriend, the white man, and his son at a wedding, was in his own car when he pulled up along an SUV in which the teenagers were sitting and asked him to turn down the music. After exchange of words, he fired between 8 and 9 shots at the vehicle, several of which hit Davis to cause his death. Dunn drove away from the scene following the shooting. So that's the gist.
That, by the way, is Jacksonville, Florida. And by the way, just on a side note, in which the white media is staying away from across the country, the prosecutor in that particular district, called state's prosecutor, is the same prosecutor who was brought down to Sanford, Florida, and is the special prosecutor in the Trayvon Martin murder.
Whoa.
Involving George Zimmerman. And by the way, Mr. Dunn had the audacity, when taken into custody, to indicate that he was invoking Stand Your Ground.
Yes, he did. He did.
Yeah.
He did.
He had the nerve to invoke that and said that he felt that all four of the niggers, I use that kind of paraphrase, I don't like to use the NIG. He said that the four niggers represented, as far as he was concerned, a threat, and he had to stand his ground and consequently open fire. And as Mr. Allen pointed out, firing anywhere from 9 to 10, 11 shots into the vehicle, killing Mr. Davis. Yeah. So, hey, you know, this is America, baby.
Yeah. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah. By the way, our condolences. We need to do this because we've also worked closely with law enforcement, particularly African American. Our condolences to the Cold Springs Ricari Police Department in the loss of Officer Decker, who was ambushed. I mean, he was lured to an apartment over a bar there in Cold Springs by a man by the name of Larson, Caucasian, who ambushed Officer Decker, a 6-year veteran of the Cold Springs Police Department, killing him instantly.
Mm.
Mr. Larson is now in custody. But I find it interesting. It's kind of like the gentleman who was involved in the massacre here in Minneapolis in the Bryn Mawr area. Why is it that white terrorists are always identified? It happened in Colorado. It happened in Tucson. Are always identified as having mental problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when an African American is involved in some kind of similar action of, you know, shooting and et cetera, it's that he was cold and calculating, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know why that, how, I guess there's a different criteria, right?
Yes, I just have word in that due to this broadcast, it looks like CNN is trying to get a hold of Mario Booker at this moment.
Oh, isn't that interesting? But it couldn't be. Why would CNN want to waste his time? Because according to Steve Brandt, to Reggie Chapman, to the news director at WCCO, the directors at KMSP, and Channel 11 and Channel 5, that the Mario Booker situation never took place. It's just that two black guys with nothing better to do just made the story up, right? You're saying CNN is trying to get in contact? Yeah.
Yes,
well, I got to tell you, Mr. Booker was just horribly and brutally beaten. And for you mothers out there and et cetera, if you were to see him, to see how battered and disfigured his face and body is, you'd be in tears. But I tell you what, you better try to protect your babies. Better try to protect your babies, Minneapolis. Because as I said, Mr. Allen, and I stand by that, as I said to the attorney Patton, you know, good luck. But irrespective of what was said in this morning's edition of the paper, ain't going to be no change, man, in the use of excessive force here in this police department. It's not going to happen.
I know. And that word came by attorney Michael Patton, who has just sent a message to the studio via email.
Okay.
That CNN is trying to get in touch with Mario Booker, because I guess they're talking to him. So, yeah, we have a call. Let's see, they've been on hold for something.
Okay, you're breaking up just a tad, Mr. Allen. Straightened up on your end in the studio, but let's get that caller in.
Caller 219, go ahead, please. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Okay, we'll try it again later. Thanks for calling.
Okay, we're down to about what now? About 7 minutes?
Yeah, we have about 4 minutes up. Yes,
okay.
4 minutes exactly. Yes,
okay, 4 minutes exactly. All right, well, I think we've covered a story that really needs to be known by our communities and by communities of similar mind and thinking. And when I say that, I mean communities that are committed to the pursuit of justice, if you will. I'm like you, Mr. Allen. I just find it amazing, based on last week's broadcast, where we challenged our so-called leadership to at least go find the information out and on their own. You know, they didn't have to believe, you know, Don and Ron, you know. Go find it out on your own. The Mr. Booker's family is a large African-American family here in the Twin Cities. And it's just amazing, the silence on the phones, as we've talked for this almost hour now. And it's just amazing the silence as it pertains to those that know about what happened to Mario Booker and the savage beating that took place around 2:30 in the morning on the 20th of November. And as I said to Mr. Patton, that's interesting, because you'd be surprised, Mr. Allen. No, you wouldn't, Mr. Allen, but people would be surprised at what the current police reports that are being put together now look like.
Oh, yeah.
Including the one about the gun. And I want to reemphasize that in the minutes of times we've got. The gun that was then being identified. See, that's what put the media here in the city on hold. High-ranking police officers in the department told the white media that Negro had a gun.
Yeah, exactly.
And they didn't have the courage. They're too lazy to at least go in, investigate that, sort out the facts from fiction and et cetera. And that's what scared them. In fact, that was one of the things I now find out was being said in the newsroom at CCO, is that, well, you know, the Negro got what he deserved because he had a gun. And as Mr. Patton said at least 8 times in his interview with us, the existence of a gun had nothing to do with the chase and the stop and the beating. And I know what people are going to say. Well, you know, Negro should have stopped and got out the car with his hands in the air. This man, Mr. Booker, was terrified of this officer. This officer had been berating him and terrorizing him for almost a decade.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Sure,
but, hey, man, nobody really cares. And I say this again to the black mothers of this enclave, this Twin Cities. You understand, you better try to educate your sons, particularly, and your daughters, but educate your babies.
And with
you're an endangered species.
Yes,
really, that's
are.
What you are here.
Sure. And with that said, Mr. Everett, coming to the end of our hour, I'd like to thank everybody listening to On Point here on Blog Talk Radio, Black Politics in Minneapolis. And we'll be back next week. Hopefully, one of the mainstream media will pick up this story and we'll get it out there, because now, because of the mainstream media ignoring this story, it's changed into two stories. And I'd like to thank you for listening. Mr. Edwards?
Thank you. Thank you, sir.